Hello, everybody out there in GWA land. This is Acrobatic Ticket 659. I am just here to do my AMA. I have gotten some great questions so far. It is currently the 7th, so as of when I'm recording this part right now. And I hope they keep coming, because this is fun. I'm enjoying it. Anyway, so let's get on to the questions. Here we go. Number one. First one. What fantasy authors inspired your work? Now, I just want to let you know, this is a can of worms that you've opened, so this is going to be long, and I'm sorry. So, to tell the truth, I actually feel a little crummy claiming my moaning on the internet was inspired by any of the greats I've read, but maybe I can talk a little bit about some of my formatives and favorites, and some of what I learned from them. Would that be okay? I hope so, because I guess that's what I'm going to do. I grew up reading my dad's gigantic collection of old pulp sci-fi stuff, with things like Keith Lamer, David Drake, Margaret St. Clair, some of the big ones like Ray Bradbury, Isaac Asimov, love me some Asimov, and Heinlein. Digging into the Wayback Machine, I was fascinated by cosmic horror stuff. I kind of always was. I really liked Lovecraft when I was too young and sheltered to really realize how much of a racist he was. Anyway, but the idea of otherness, when applied exclusively to things that aren't human, really kind of struck me as interesting. I guess I'd say I learned to appreciate the idea of a thing being really truly alien from Lovecraft. Cthulhu and his lot were examples of how utterly foreign, alien, and horrible things could be in an uncaring universe. On the other hand, I think a good example of what I learned from the 50s sci-fi stuff is like from Keith Lamer's Bolo books that took these weird, artificially intelligent space tanks and made them these like selfless paragons of humanity, all while obviously possessing completely foreign senses and thought processes. Like, that was interesting. It's like establishing that cognition allows for unity. It allows understanding, no matter how different things are. I kind of think of a lot of old 50s sci-fi stuff like as fantasy, because it was the future imagined by people of a different time, so it's like a way different future than we now know is going to be the reality. It was all the whole atomic age thing back then. But there was no internet. I love newer stuff too, obviously. If you want anything cyberpunk, pick up Neal Stephenson. It's awesome. Regardless, eventually I graduated into fantasy. I say graduated because I think sci-fi is amazing and I will love it forever, but it tries to play to some degree by the rules. Like, it tries to take rules and extrapolate into the future. Fantasy is willing to say, fuck the rules. There's magic and monsters now. It's not necessarily better, but it's willing to imagine a more unbound world. And I kind of bridged over into that via the Pern books, actually, which pretend to be sci-fi but are basically fantasy. Obviously, the classics like Tolkien, which is kind of funny because his is like the most chaste fantasy world in there is, and here I am talking dirty on the internet in fantasy scenarios. A personal favorite fantasy author, the one I kind of like aspire to be like in my non-sexy writings and in, well, everything, is China Miéville, who, if you haven't checked out, you should. His Boss Logg trilogy, which starts with Perdido Street Station, is just like amazing stuff. It's amazing. I've read Mountains of Forgotten Realms stuff. I'm going to count Terry Pratchett's Discworld books, lots of Neil Gaiman stuff. And this is going to sound like a cop-out for some people, but every Dungeon Master I've ever had, I'm counting those. I think... Okay. Micro soapbox time. I think everybody is full of amazing stories, and I think that sometimes the great authors really just have a combination of perseverance and luck. And that's not to diminish the greats. That's they're great for a reason. but it's to elevate all those wonderful storytellers that never get heard. So that was a whole lot of words, and I hope that the answer you were looking for is in there. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Next question. Number two. For the breach VA script fills you filled so far, did you deepen your own voice for them, or did you use a program? Either way, it's really impressive. Well, thank you. Okay, so I want to start by saying I feel super lame correcting this, but just for consistency's sake, I've been calling it The Blend. I actually think The Breach is way cooler now that I've heard it, but I think it's too late to go back, so I'm just tossing that out there. The Breach, if they ever made like a show out of it, which they won't ever, but you know, I'd go with The Breach, if you don't mind my stealing that. Short answer is a little. It can get pretty low, but you know, not as continuously and as smoothly as I sound like in some of the stuff. Sometimes when I hit the really low stuff, I start kind of cracking, and nobody wants to hear that. So, yeah, I'm kind of a fraud, just a little bit. I hope that doesn't ruin the experience. For the dragon and Rosso, the Minotaur, I needed a little electronic assistance, more than for, like, Keeg, the alien, or Karg, the bartender. I know Keeg and the dragon weren't part of the blend, but, you know, the principles were the same, so I figured I'd include them. I didn't really have to do anything for the werewolf. As long as we're talking tools of the trade, though, I use Audacity, both because it's incredibly powerful. It's a wonderful tool set once you figure out all the things you can do with it. I'm still figuring things out with it. Also, it's free. Acrobatic Ticket 659 is in no way affiliated with Audacity and receives no benefits or endorsement royalties from its creators. I did want to plug it, though, because it's really a great thing, and it can let you start doing voice work for free, or any kind of sound work, really. It's awesome. I like playing with the effects. I like effects. I think I think effects help with kind of immersion, because if you have different data from multiple sources other than just a voice, and the voice is just how you want it, especially if that voice is, you know, otherworldly or unlikely to be human, I think that helps with immersion. So effects and effect stuff are my jam. I should add the caveat that I don't actually think that any script requires effects. I think that the writer and the voice actor bring the sexy themselves, and effects are just icing on the cake. I like them for immersion, particularly when you do out there stuff that requires a little more suspension of disbelief, like what I do mostly. That's why I try and offer to do effects help for anybody who wants to fill one of my scripts. And I find hunting for effects stuff soothing anyway. Okay, next question. Number three. Are you a cat or dog person? Parentheses. The correct answer is cat person. Unparentheses. I'm sorry to disappoint, but I guess I'm incorrect then. I have nothing against cats. I'm actually very fond of cats, but they want to kill me. Not literally, but their dander will destroy me. I become this weepy, snotty mess in a cat house. There are meds I can take, but dogs are a buddy that won't destroy my respiratory system. And yeah, there you go. Sorry. Shorter answer for that one. Next question. Number four. Number one, how are you? Two, do you have any tattoos? Three, what's your hair color? Four, you got any games on your phone? Okay, so, number one, I'm good, thank you. Number two, I have one tattoo, it's tiny and it's on my finger. There's a bicep tattoo I've always wanted to get, that I have drawn out and all planned, but I haven't, so mentioning it is just sort of dumb, I guess. Three, brown, rapidly going gray. I had the Reed Richards superhero old thing going for a while, but the salt has kind of invaded too deep into the pepper to really say that anymore. And four, not currently, actually. When I have a few minutes, I'm usually either tappity-tapping away at the new script or book. Otherwise, I'm probably reading, listening to an audiobook while I shop or drive, or, you know, what have you. I'm sorry if that's a boring answer. Okay, question number five. Will you be making part twos for some of your audios? I'm going to say probably. I'm planning at some point pretty soon to do Stranded with the Enemy 2. At the moment, I'm hoping to make the blend take off, and I think the best way to do that is to just keep mixing it up a bit. While I think Stranded is pretty ready for a sequel, sequels to some of the others are a little tricky. Like, I could maybe make a BFE for the bartender, which maybe that'd be fun. And I can think of one or two ways I could go with the werewolf, but they might not be the same thematically. It's kind of tricky because, like, first encounters are more spontaneous, and, like, there's lots of themes to explore, but going after the same themes twice for the same characters can be a challenge when their initial encounter is unplanned. Like, in the meantime, I figure on writing and self-filling some more M4Fs and just writing some F4Ms, all as part of the blend. But Stranded, yeah, that'll get a sequel at some point. I'll think about the other ones. If you have a suggestion, shoot it by me. I love suggestions. Hanging by the Horns and How to Fuck Your Dragon are the products of the brilliant Flyleaf Friction and Strawberry Mars, respectively. I would certainly be happy to revisit Rosso or the Dragon, but you'll want to petition their creators for those. And no pressure, they've got their own stuff to do. But, you know, I'd do it. Question number six. What do you like to do in your free time? I guess I sort of talked a little bit about that, but only a little bit. Honestly, lately, mostly this. It's a fairly new hobby, but it's one I'm really loving. When I'm not doing this, I write non-pornographic material. I read, occasionally I play computer games, and I wish I had more free time to do any of those things more. I used to Dungeon Master, like the non-expressly sexy kind, but with COVID, my group is kind of on an indefinite hiatus. I feel sort of compelled to toss out there that I get a lot of the same kind of gratification from doing this as I did from Dungeon Mastering. It's kind of rewarding in the same way. I like entertaining and making people happy. I hope I do a decent job of doing that for you guys. But, yeah, I like storytelling. I like sexy times, obviously. And being able to combine the two is fun. You know. Number seven. How did you discover GWA? And what sort of got you into making erotic audios? By the way, I love your content and your voice, so keep up the good work. First, thank you so much. I'm kind of a pleaser, so knowing that people like my stuff really means a lot. Like, that's a lot to me. The werewolf was really hard for me to do because I'm a pleaser, but I received so many comments from people that really liked it that I kind of had enough, for lack of a better phrase, enthusiastic meta consent that I feel good about it. And I could do stuff like that again. So that's on the table. I'm just letting you know if that's something you're enthusiastic about. If it makes people happy, then I'm all about it. That's kind of the bottom line. I'm totally rambling off on a tangent, so I'm going to focus back in on the original question. Got me into erotic audios. Okay. Honestly, I discovered GWA because I was looking for a different kind of erotica. I've always been a person who's very into the sound aspect of sex. Porn and such are fine, but it can be kind of exploitative unless you look for just the right stuff. And it's just people fucking. I like setup and I like a little build. I've always liked written erotica a whole lot. And because I spend a lot of time on the road, I tend to listen to a lot of audiobooks, like not erotic audiobooks, but audiobooks. So one day it sort of occurred to me, I like books, I like audiobooks, I like written erotica. I bet there's some pretty sexy autoerotica. That's a whole different thing. Audio erotica out there. A few fumbling Google searches later, and I discovered GWA. I heard some of the content on here, and I loved it. And I rapidly burrowed my way through a lot of GWA content very quickly. I have a niche, as you've probably noticed, and I burned through a lot of that niche content very quickly. I started thinking about how I can't be the only monster fucker out there that would like more, so I just sort of started writing fantasy content for a long time. I wrote a bunch of F for M scripts, and the feeling of getting a couple of them filled was just like electrifying. It was so good. And I decided I wanted to share that feeling, so I figured I'd try doing some audio myself. But at first, I wasn't really sure if my voice would be any good for anybody, so I didn't want to fill anybody else's stuff and make like a mockery of it. So I tried doing a couple of gimmicky things. That breakdown of my first time, which I thought was kind of funny, if nothing else, and that ramble that was basically just me getting high and talking about dick size. But then I figured, okay, those were not really great representations of what I could do. If I wanted to really see if people actually liked my voice, I figured I should go all in and create something I would really actually want to listen to, and that's when I did Stranded with the Enemy. That got a much better response than I figured. And like I said, I'm a pleaser, so I wanted to do more. I had this big idea for the blend, and I really wanted to make the whole GWA mythos thing happen, which I'm not giving up on, by the way. So I recorded my first one for that, and after I hit 100 followers, it occurred to me, you still haven't actually filled anything for anybody else like you said you were going to, dummy. So, I did Strawberry Mars's How to Fuck Your Dragon, which was a lot of fun. And now, while I'm still trying to get some interest in the blend and maybe get a few creators to climb aboard, I plan on mixing in fills along with the self-fills. And Flyleaf Friction's Hanging by the Horns was the best of both worlds, and I'm a sucker for big friendly lugs, so that was kind of a slam dunk for me. Okay, question 8. If you had the chance to go back in time and tell 10-year-old you something mentally or emotionally significant, what would it be? Wow. How much time do I have with 10-year-old me? I think it's a toss-up between don't be afraid to take a few risks. You'll like you a lot more when you get older. But it would be better to start now. Not everything is a matter of life and death. Or, maybe just everything you think is cool now is either going to be embarrassing to you in a few decades, or you will be geeking out about for the rest of your life. There is no middle ground. Maybe not the last one. Definitely not. You will write and talk dirty on the internet recreationally when you grow up. As 10-year-old me would probably die right then. But then, like, maybe I just wouldn't. Like, I'm saying this from a place of luxury. I had enough to get by growing up, and not everybody does. I had nice parents, I had good friends. Most of the things that made me a troubled nerd were based on depression and generalized anxiety, which are internal, but the experiences I had growing up are what made me who I am today. I'm not saying I couldn't be better, by any means, believe me, but I came by who I am honestly, and mistakes you don't make are ones you don't learn from. Plus, I'd be creating a temporal paradox, the ramifications of which are unknown, but could unravel temporal causality as we know it, and I just don't want that kind of responsibility. Compelling question. Okay, next question. Who is your favorite GWA VA? I can't answer that. It's not that I, like, don't want to. I can really just honestly say I don't have a favorite. I mean, there are so many talented, amazing, sexy people on here. It's like, you all are great. You're all awesome. The raw amount of talent and creativity you find on here is just breathtaking. And I love so many of you for so many different reasons. I don't think I could say this is my favorite person on here. It just isn't fair. I'm sorry if that sounds like a cop-out, but that's what I'm going with. All right, next one. What's your favorite class and race to play as in D&D? I'm not sure if I'm supposed to out her or not, but I'm gonna. She noted that this is Strawberry. Hi, Straubs. You're the best. Okay, so to answer the question, I don't play D&D. I'm not that... I think anybody who has heard or read any of my stuff knows that I have to be a D&D nerd, and I am. I would actually say it's a tie between Warlock and DM. My favorite D&D joke was always, I'm a dungeon master, and I also host a game of D&D. But my favorite character of all time was a Yaunty Warlock. I'd go back to that character in a heartbeat, given the opportunity. And, you know, like, not everybody includes Yaunty in their list of playable races. I was just fortunate enough to have a DM that was willing to, and that was so much fun. And it's sort of a accidental power gamer move to play a Yaunty Warlock, but I just think it's very fitting. He was a Yaunty spy that went native, basically, that fell in love with warm blood culture, and he was very charismatic but not very smart. I took a lot of my cues from Brad Pitt's character in Burn After Reading for that character. I managed to, through a mix of disguise for the first couple levels, and then I can never remember the name, the invocation that allows you to disguise self at will. I managed to... The other characters in that group thought I was human all the way to the end. I was kind of excited for when somebody figured it out, and they never did. The players knew, obviously, but the characters did not. Question number 12. Do you love me? Are you playing your love games with me? Okay, so I don't know, but I think I know who this is. And if I'm correct, yes, I do. And you bet your sweet, delectable ass that I am. Moving on. Next question is actually a repeat question verbatim, which doesn't make it a bad question. We've already done it. Question number 13 is, who is your favorite GWA VA? And the answer again is, I cannot answer that. Everybody here is so great, and I have a lot of favorites for different things, and I have a lot of favorite people, and this is just an awesome community, and you can't make me do that. You can't. I refuse. I can't anyway. It is impossible. But I like you. Oops. So somehow I got these out of order, but I guess it doesn't really matter the order I do them in, so I'll just do it now. What attracts you to monster scripts and monster content? Okay, so I kind of figured this one was coming, and I kind of have a lot to say about it, I think. We'll see. There are a few things I want to talk about before I really get into it, and I think it helps understand where I'm coming from. To start, I want to talk about a couple that are not my kink, definitively. And this is a tricky subject because I say for most things, you do you. I don't want to poop on anybody's party. But I'll just say that there something I am personally not comfortable with is the othering of other human beings, other groups of human beings. You do you, I guess, but that just makes me uncomfortable. Can't make it happen. So, like, that's a problem for me. But othering itself is kind of sexy. Like, there's something interesting about something that genuinely is different than a person. Something that has different senses or different wiring or different shapes, different sizes that, kind of inherently beget a little bit of power discrepancy, which size difference does not indicate who's going to be a top and who's going to be a bottom necessarily. It's just helpful to the reptilian brain, I think. Anyway, I think that's compelling. And I'm a big proponent of the Harkness test. If you don't know what that is, I've already made some of my friends end up putting that in their Google history. So, if the FBI is looking at them, they go, "What's that?" Oh. Anyway, I think there is a reason. I think the reason that I like monster stuff is that it is simultaneously embracing the weird and embracing cognition, embracing the thing that is really what intimacy is about, which is not just feeling and not just thinking, but that or that perfect blend of both. That's where, like, not just sexy, there's a place for sexy, don't get me wrong, but that's where intimacy comes from, I think. And that has a lot of value to me. And neither thinking or feeling really are physical things. They're not physical attributes. It's about the person, or monster in this case, that experiences them and the partner that they're experiencing them with. And I'm a romantic, softy, gooey guy, sorry. And processing, buffering, working. There's the metaphorical aspect of it, and it's been pointed out in better terms than I'm sure I'm going to use, but as a metaphor, the monster is something that can either doesn't or can't fit into normal society and rejects it in some manner. And there's something relatable or compelling about that. Okay, so I made some talking points for these questions, so I wasn't just like sitting here going, as I'm wont to do. But I'm sort of having an epiphany right now as I'm answering, so bear with me. So I'm autistic. You might be saying, "Wow, I had no idea." And you might be saying, "Well, duh, I've gotten both of those, and I never know which is going to come out of somebody, probably because I'm autistic." But I think probably that is part of the monster thing. I am someone who really genuinely doesn't think like most people. I think I've sort of felt like the other for a lot of my life, which is why I not only like monster stuff, but I often feel like I identify more with the monster. And maybe that's also why, like, I like my monsters to be stand-up dudes mostly. Or stand-up people in general, not necessarily dudes, you know. So yeah, that's an idea that I'm processing right now. So bear with me. Yes, I'm gonna go with it. I think that's accurate. P.S. I am 100% not saying that autistic people are monsters. That's just as a person who grew up feeling weird, I think that I am inherently attracted to stories with weird characters. So that's all I guess I'm saying. Okay, last question. What do you find the most surprising about making amateur porn for strangers? The good and the bad. Okay, this is an interesting question. And in terms of good, I think the biggest surprise is the ways I found I enjoy doing it. Like, I like doing it, but the how of it is a surprise. I know I kind of already talked about this part in a previous question, but writing and voice acting a script that people turn out to like honestly presses the same kind of gratification buttons in my brain as the feeling after like DMing a really good D&D session that I think the group really liked. And so by doing that, I've facilitated people's good time. I'm a giver. What can I say? Filling somebody else's scripts gives a feeling like kind of playing in a really good D&D game, where you feel like you've facilitated everybody's good time, but like differently, in a different way, different vibes. It's simultaneously more and less responsibility than doing your own stuff, where you weren't involved in the core creation process, but you really want to bring that person's vision to life in a way that does it justice. So it's more and less stressful and more and less fun, and it's just a different animal. But that wasn't the question. I just like knowing that something with a creative element to it that I did makes people happy. And whether that's reading it out of a book or out of a script or just me dirty talking to all you wonderful people out there, like that's just a good feeling that if somebody likes it, then that makes me happy. There's also how electrifying it is when somebody fills one of my scripts. Like, that's the best word for it. It sets me like happy flapping, like I used to when I was a less socially conscious kid. See, also autism. Like, that moment when you log in and you see somebody's filled your script, it's like somewhere between being surprised by a movie trailer based off one of your favorite books and you didn't even know that that adaptation is on its way, and the person you've been crushing on forever out of the blue tongue kissing you after you walk them to their car one night. Not like on a scale between them, but like it's bits of both of those feelings. I've been fortunate enough to experience that second one once in my life, and like 5 stars, would visit again. Also, and this one is really out of left field, but the friends I've made. I've chatted with a lot of like fellow creators, and I found this sense of community that I've never could never have imagined and just haven't ever had. That was not something I expected, and it's great. You all know who you are, and I love you for real. Okay, so the bad. There are a few things, and none of them outweigh the good, but there are things. A big one is that I just can't bring myself to tell most of my meat space friends, the friends in the world of meat, where you keep your meat rather than online. Anyway, like, I have friends out in the world, but I just don't know that they would ever really understand it. There's always going to be, like, a paranoid little part of me that lives in fear that they are somehow going to find out that I recreationally write and talk dirty on the internet. And that would be a way worse conversation than if I just told them, but I still can't bring myself to tell them. So there you go. This is a silly thing to put in this section, maybe, but I like it a lot and it takes a lot of my time. I underestimated the time sink a little bit when I started, and it's hard setting aside uninterrupted time, at least as often as I'd like to do it. Like, liking things you do too much is kind of a dumb thing to put in the bad section, but there are a lot of parts of the day where I'm doing something necessary and I think, I wish I was writing or recording right now. So that's one. And this is a big one, anxiety. Like, I really like doing stuff that people enjoy. And I mean, who doesn't like that? There's always, though, a part of me that is terrified that the thing that I'm working on or that I just posted is going to turn out to be this embarrassing heap of crap. I actually kind of think that the line between sexy and ridiculous is thin, very thin, especially on high suspension of disbelief projects, and especially on sexual suspension of disbelief projects, due to how we all kind of feel a little self-conscious about sex in the first place. And yet, the closer you get to that line without going over it, somehow, the sexier the project gets a lot of the time. So, like, you get to this peak of sexy, and then suddenly you're over it, and oh my god, it's ridiculous. So I'm always afraid that I've crossed that line from, like, kinky sexy to goofy not sexy, and that works my nerves a bit come posting time. Okay, so it looks like that finishes off for this AMA. I am an excessively verbose motherfucker, and I wanted to do a complete job of answering all your questions, and I hope you weren't bored to tears by me doing it too much. I really want to thank you all you wonderful, amazing, sexy people out there for letting me fulfill my cheap trick, I want you to want me, fantasy a little bit, and letting me explore the glorious wonderland that is kink. And for just being all around awesome, sexy people. I look forward to reading or hearing all of you around the GWA verse at some point. Bye.